I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Wendy Ring. Welcome to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up. Jim Thompson knows you can tackle big problems by starting small.
I grew up in small towns in North Dakota, and my experience with youth sports was just unequivocally positive, happy. When my son got to be of the age to start playing sports, I was stunned about how things had changed and how much suffering there was.
Coaches yelling at kids, parents yelling at coaches.
Kids quitting sports.
He quit his high-powered job as director of the public management program at Stanford Business School and started the Positive Coaching Alliance.
What caused me to leave my job and start that organization was all that suffering. The key idea is that positivity gets the best out of kids. My first workshop I did with Positive Coaching Alliance 20-some years ago, we had two coaches at the first one. And when I left, we were doing 3,500 live workshops a year.
Then another big problem showed up on Jim's radar, climate change.
I knew it was bad, but I just had no idea how bad it was and how quickly it was coming.
So he left the sports program and started another organization called This Is What We Did.
I anticipate a conversation with my grandchildren down the road where they say, Grandpa Jim, what did you do to fight climate change? And I want to be able to say, this is what we did, and have very specific things that matter. This is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life.
But how does one person take on a big, wicked global problem?
I heard a talk recently, and the speaker talked about St. Francis of Assisi, that just before he died young. He said, I am at peace because I did what I was given to do. And I am thinking, what is it that I have been given to do? When you're winning, doing well, and you're kind of just cruising along, it's easy to be positive and work hard. But character is about doing the right thing when it matters. And right now, it matters more than any other time. It is daunting and it's discouraging. I think there are three stories of climate change. The first one is, what, me worry? It'll be taken care of. Our leaders, our high tech, they'll figure it out. Well, actually, a lot of our leaders are making things worse. The second one is, oh my God, we're all going to die. And that's closer to the truth, but it doesn't help you. The third story, the one I really focus on, is I call it the car crash story. I was driving on 101 from Mountain View to San Jose one day, and I was caught in between these two big semis, and I realized, oh my God, if one of them slides over, I got nowhere to go. So I don't remember if I sped up or slowed down, but I got out of there as quickly as I could, and then it hit me. That's where we are. We're in a car crash. We're going to hit that other car. Climate change can be stopped, but it can't be reversed. So we're going to hit that other car. Does it make sense to slam on the brakes as hard as you can, even if you're going to hit the other car? Well, of course it does, because if you hit that other car at 100 miles an hour versus if you hit it at 60, that could be the difference between millions and maybe even billions of people being saved. So it's really bad, and each of us needs to figure out, what is it we've been given to do?
How does one person take on a big, wicked global problem? Lots of folks are asking themselves that question.
When I started Positive Coaching Alliance, first thing I did was think, like, what's the real problem? What's driving the problem? You know, kids are dropping out of sports. Parents are screaming at officials. Kids are being browbeaten by coaches who have a win-at-all-cost mentality. But what's the real problem? And I deduced that the real problem was a professional sports, entertainment, business kind of culture that comes down from professional sports. And if you want to change youth sports, you got to change the culture. It's not just training a few coaches. When I started looking at climate change, it's like, what is the real problem here?
The International Energy Agency recently stated unequivocally that we cannot keep global warming under 1.5 degrees Celsius unless funding for fossil fuel infrastructure and new development stops now.
There are three flows of money that we have to interrupt, or not to make too big a point of it, or we're doomed.
One of those money taps that needs turning off is our own government, which subsidizes the fossil fuel industry to the tune of $20 billion a year. Savannah Bertrand is a policy associate at the Environmental and Energy Study Institute.
There are so many different ways that the federal government subsidizes fossil fuels, and probably the largest one is tax breaks for fossil fuel companies. But there are also a number of other ways, cheap leases and royalty rates on public lands,
with coal and oil leases as low as $2 per acre.
And another big one is through the externalities. health issues and environmental issues and climate change.
The public cost of these impacts is estimated to be around $650 billion a year, which for comparison is nearly as much as the entire U.S. military budget.
Those are issues that really affect us all, and they especially affect communities of color. So it's really important to be aware of the full extent.
Candidate Biden promised to end fossil fuel subsidies. How much progress has he made?
As of right now, in the Biden-Harris proposed budget, all fossil fuels tax breaks are eliminated, but that has to go through the budget process and has to go through Congress.
Getting rid of the subsidies was in Biden's original infrastructure bill, but that got stripped out along with most of the climate stuff. What did stay in the bill is $8 billion in new fossil fuel subsidies for carbon capture and storage.
The best chance of cutting fossil fuel subsidies this year, and maybe for the next several years, is the reconciliation bill. Over 50 House Democrats signed a letter to party leadership stating that measures to eliminate fossil fuel subsidies should be included.
It's hard to see Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema voting that one through the Senate. And about those $2 an acre leases, fossil fuel companies, which already have enough leases stockpiled to produce for decades beyond blowing the carbon budget, got an injunction last month requiring the government to issue more.
So the prospects for ending fossil fuel subsidies are not looking good.
That's why Jim decided to focus on stopping another major source of fossil fuel funding, banks. Banks like JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo provide essential funding for pipeline projects like Dakota Access and Enbridge's Line 3, which would carry nearly a million barrels a day of tar sands from Alberta to Wisconsin. The route crosses wetlands where treaties protect the rights of indigenous people to fish and collect wild rice. Enbridge pipelines have a history of repeated oil spills and safety violations with contamination of rivers and groundwater.
And you can't believe what these banks say about themselves. The financial industry is awash in greenwash. The Rainforest Action Network, which tracks global bank investment in fossil fuels, calls Chase Bank's announcement that they are aligning their financing practices with the Paris Agreement a fig leaf for fossil fuel expansion.
Jackie Fielder of Stop the Money Pipeline, a coalition of 150 organizations working to stop the flow of funding from banks, insurance companies, and big investors, gives us a peek at what's under JP Morgan Chase's fig leaf.
In May of this year, JP Morgan Chase released its 2030 climate targets. And this is basically a page from the oil industry in that they said that they have goals to reduce their carbon intensity. It's a really tricky framing because it's not carbon emissions, which is what the Paris Agreement is concerned with. And technically, less carbon intensive could be compatible entirely with increased emissions. It's just plain greenwashing.
For example, Chase funds Shell, which meets the carbon intensity requirement by expanding natural gas production more than oil production.
They count natural gas as cleaner than oil, although with upstream emissions, that's debatable. So that lowers the carbon intensity per unit of production while raising emissions overall.
Carbon offsets are another way to be carbon neutral without decreasing emissions.
They'll say, we'll just continue business as usual. We'll expand our fossil fuel infrastructure, but we will offset it with protecting this forest. I think in all of this, it's also important to remember that there's active violence on people happening because of the banks and their allegiance to the fossil fuel industry. So this is also an indigenous rights and human rights issue. I'm also a member of the three affiliated tribes in North Dakota, and they are actually host to oil development and where the Dakota Access Pipeline starts. So this all is very personal for me. The Line 3 pipeline, which is being constructed in violation of indigenous rights of the Anishinaabe people, an egregious violation of indigenous rights that's happening on Biden's watch. Enbridge, the company building the Line 3 pipeline, has been reimbursing local law enforcement for rubber bullets, for police, labor, all of the expenses that they've accrued in protecting this pipeline from unarmed water protectors.
They've basically hired the police, whose job is supposed to be protecting citizens, to act as private security for their pipeline. Talk about conflict of interest.
This is not possible without the financing of major Wall Street banks.
Banks are financing fossil fuel development and really the destruction of the planet. The worst is Chase, Citibank is second, Wells Fargo is third, and Bank of America are fourth. In the last 5 years since the Paris Accords, those four, only those four banks have put almost $1 trillion into financing fossil fuel. The fossil fuel industry cannot do what it's doing without bank loans and financing. So the banks are really, I think, a key leverage point.
We are here in front of JP Morgan Chase's Pacific Northwest headquarters, and we are shutting down the street with hundreds of people, and we're here to say that they need to stop the money pipeline and divest from fossil fuels.
Stop the Money Pipeline has been organizing protests at Chase banks around the country for over a year. In May, after Chase's announcement about carbon intensity, Stop the Money Pipeline gave Chase the 2021 Greenwashing Award for outstanding contributions to the field of greenwashing, and protesters delivered certificates to over 150 bank branches. Actions at banks around the country have ranged from physically shutting down bank branches and creating mock oil spills using molasses to appointment bombing the calendars of bank CEOs.
I've taken part in several of these bank protests locally. One of them only had 8 people, and I have to say that a few folks standing around with protest signs didn't feel like it accomplished much. I bet the bank would get a lot more upset if 8 people marched in and closed their accounts.
Jim had the same idea.
I was organizing protests at branches of Wells Fargo. My wife said to me, isn't that kind of hypocritical because we still have our money in Wells Fargo? If we can take our money away from those climate bad banks, that gives us some leverage. There's so much money to be made. There's trillions of dollars that the fossil fuel industry is looking to make. We're not going to be able to persuade them to stop. We got to accumulate the power to make them stop.
The fossil fuel industry needs banks more than banks need the fossil fuel industry.
Banks tend to have maybe 7.5% of their investments in climate change. They could do something else. They could make money all kinds of different ways. And that's the first initiative we're working on, is move your money.
Jim discovered it's not so easy.
My paycheck was being direct deposited into Wells Fargo. I had to figure out what my account was, passwords and everything. I got into it, and it asked me 2 security questions. Where did you meet your spouse? And who is your favorite teacher? And it came back and said, sorry, those are the wrong answers. Now, this is the point at which I would have stopped and said, okay, I don't have time for this. I'll come back to it later. And I would not have come back to it. But I stuck with it for the next hour and I got it done because it was 10 o'clock on Friday morning. And at noon that day, we had a cohort meeting of people moving our money. And the week before, I had said I was going to figure out how to stop my direct deposit to Wells Fargo. That is what a lot of us need, is we need that public commitment. We need to get together with a group of people and say, I really want to get out of this climate bad bank. I know it's one of the most effective things I can do, but it's just really complicated. So we meet once a week and we talk about what needs to happen. So we give people a step-by-step process. We give them an information sheet that they can use to say, what do I need for my new bank or my new credit union? We give them a way to find climate-friendly banks and credit unions. For a lot of people, ATMs are really important to have them around. And the place where we do our grocery shopping has a Wells Fargo ATM right there. And it was a little painful to give that up. But you know what? I found out that there's a credit union less than half a block away. It's in the same parking lot. When you do it step by step, it's not that difficult. And when you have a group of people who you know on Friday or Thursday or whenever your meeting is, who they're not only going to want to know if you did what you said you're going to do, but they're also going to cheer you like crazy when you do it.
Some of our listeners may want to ditch their bank after this episode. Can you break down those steps for us?
Here are the steps. The first thing you need to do is figure out, where do you want to go with your money? Here's how you can find a credit union near you. Here are some online climate-friendly banks. You can then take the inventory you've done of what you need and match it up against those. So the first thing is, yes, try to figure out where you want to go. So by next week, see if you can have 2 or 3 potential places. And then the second step is to identify all of your auto pays and direct deposits. So that's the second step, to identify all those. And that's really the heavy lifting, those 2 things. And then we ask people to write a letter to the CEO of that company and to take it over to the branch. When we dropped our Wells Fargo account, I went over to the local branch where we did all our business, and I asked to see the branch manager, and we had a wonderful conversation. It's about a four-week process. People go to a one-hour orientation over Zoom, and we explain what's involved, and then people have a chance to sign up for the next 4 weeks, and by the end of the 4 weeks, they typically can move out of their climate bad bank.
So who is participating in these cohorts?
Maybe 80% is from California, but we have people from Washington State, from New York City, Chicago, really all over the country. I'd say the majority of the people are over 50. When we developed our program and our mission statement, the last line of our mission statement is that we consider people 50 years and older to be an untapped resource for climate change. I have this image of a person who is 90 years old and, you know, they're on their last day and they say, well, I want to send out one more email before I go. We all can play a role here.
I can see the power of cohorts because something that might feel futile to do as one person feels more powerful when you do it together.
The actions we take individually really don't add up to much when we're looking at something as huge as climate change. If in solidarity, we can do this together, lots and lots of people, that's when you have an impact. Some research that was done by Erica Chenoweth at the Kennedy School at Harvard and Maria Stephan indicates that when about 3.5% of the population supports a resistance movement, the chances of that movement being successful go way up. So 3.5% of the population in the United States is about 11.5 million people. To me, that seems entirely doable. One of the great things about this is that when people move their money from a climate bad bank to a climate friendly credit union or bank, they tend to feel empowered and they want to do more. We feel like, wow, I did this, and now what's the next thing I can do?
That transition from cohort participant to climate activist doesn't happen just because people move some money. This is what we did's cohort leaders treat the process as more than the means to a one-shot deal.
There are three things we focus on. One is a compelling educational experience. If they come out of it and say, oh, that was okay, then we lose. They got to come out of that saying, wow, I'm really fired up to do this. Second, then, is a welcoming community. When people get involved with us, they feel like they're part of something bigger themselves. And the third is easy access on ramps to effective action. We're not the whole answer, but we want to be an important part of building that movement that can save as much of the planet and as much of human civilization as possible.
Actually do more with your money than just make sure it's not supporting bad things.
Megan Rinza is the co-founder of Mighty, an online women-owned bank comparison site created with a radical proposition.
What if we realize that it is our money that drives the banking system versus the other way around?
Mighty compiles the publicly available data on every bank and credit union in the U.S. into a simple, searchable online format to help you find banks that invest in things you care about.
Banking kind of has a boring rap, but when we first started Mighty, we were inspired by things like Kickstarter and other crowdfunding platforms or Kiva, where you can take your money and you can back a cool project or you can back a cool business and you can be part of that story and you can help launch something awesome. And we will communicate back to you like how it's going and people love it. And so that's what Mighty wants to bring to banking.
Mighty can help you find a bank or credit union that fits your values.
You can go on their website, mightydeposits.com, and choose from a drop-down what you'd like your money to support.
You can find Black-owned banks, women-owned banks, banks that invest in small farms or small businesses. But if climate is your priority, start here.
Look up a bank in your area or anywhere across the country that is certified for sustainable financing.
A lot of these are small community banks and credit unions.
Community banks are operating in completely different markets than global banks. In terms of the resiliency of a community bank versus a global bank, you know, if we look back to the 2008 recession, or if we look to what's been happening through the pandemic, community banks are notable in that they've been more insulated from the impacts of global events.
Like what will happen when the world decides we really can't burn all our fossil fuel reserves and they become worthless. The housing bubble that burst in 2008 and brought the world to its financial knees was triggered by a loss of $250 billion. Economists project that the carbon bubble is 8 times larger. Still, it's hard to leave behind the devil we know.
People say, I want to leave my bank. It's a top funder of fossil fuels. But I don't know which bank to choose. There's so many options and I need to narrow it down and I don't want to make the wrong decision. It's not like when you walk into the aisle of cleaning products, if you want to get more greener cleaning products for your home and you're like, which one do I buy? Banking feels more serious. If you end up putting money in the account, are you going to like lose it? There's like a fear. You don't need to move all your money at once. You can open up a new account and try out the interface. Once you do that, you realize it's not that scary. It's not that hard. And you learn so much more by actually doing than by forever researching. And here it is a couple years later and you've been wanting to move your money and you never did. Sometimes people say, I don't know what to do with this data. Mighty, just help me choose. So we've created these things called Mighty Guides. And we have Mighty's Guide to Eco-Friendly Banking, Mighty's Guide to Socially Responsible Banking. So I encourage people to check those out.
Are visitors to Mighty's website actually moving their money out of Wall Street banks? Megan and Mighty's co-founder, Sophia Wagner, can't track what people do with the information they provide.
We've heard from a lot of community banks that Mighty is helping them be seen not as dying dinosaurs, frankly, but as newly relevant and important. What we all need in banks, we can kind of reconsider. Just because they don't have a national presence, thousands of branches, it's 2021, like you can bank online. Young people like under 25 who come to our site, when we show where bank branches are, they literally ask us, why would I care where the bank branch is? Why are you wasting my time and why are you wasting space on your website? Like, who would ever care about it? And I love it because it trips me up, you know, because I grew up thinking like you need to know where the bank branch is so you're close to your money so you can walk to your money. But, you know, young people are just saying, I don't care where it is. We hear from community banks that people are saying, hey, I found you on Mighty. I love that you are focused on lending to small business. I've been wanting to find a bank focus on communities of color. I've been wanting to find a bank that doesn't fund fossil fuels. And I'm so happy to find you.
Lots of us spend time and energy figuring out how to make the most eco-friendly purchases. But where you store your money can matter even more than where you spend it.
Where you bank is a vote for what is your money funding. And if your money's funding X, that's doing so at an opportunity cost of Y. Right now, banking just is all about convenience and your app. But our hope is that in a decade from now, people will think about their banking and their ability to influence the economy and what's funded. If you care about something and you're protesting for it, if you're writing letters, if you're donating $50, $100, the truth is you can do magnitudes order larger if you bank that issue as well. When you put money in a bank, it's regenerative. That money can be lent out again and again and again. When you buy something, you might end up contributing that $10 purchase to a cause. But what you bank, you get to vote what you want to create money for. It's pretty awesome.
The awesomeness is catching on.
A handful of years ago, the idea of banking green seemed like a nice thing to do, but not an urgent thing to do, or something for a niche audience. Same with the idea of banking black. But now, it's going mainstream. I think it speaks to the movement making that has happened up until now, and it speaks to the importance of our actions now. We're at the point where through collective action, through collective organizing of institutional money, which is large in volume, and then combining the power of institutional money, questioning, what are you doing with our money? And young people just in mass, which in 10, 20 years will control the majority of money, and you want to get young customers, a mass amount of young people saying, we're going to reward businesses that can show us the data about how are they leading on this, not greenwashing. Those two forces are really powerful. And I think we're at the inflection point of that moment in history right now.
One thing that could really move this along is public banking, which would enable cities and states to divest huge sums of money from climate bad banks.
There's a movement to establish state and municipal banks that could take the billions in fees and bond interest that cities and states have been paying to private banks and use it to reinvest in their own communities.
Not one single city has divested their money, and the problem is that there's not a big enough bank for them to put their money into that's ethical. One of the big impediments to divesting city monies is that there are laws on the books that prevent money from being put into banks other than big Wall Street banks.
That's what brought climate and indigenous rights activist Jackie Fielder into the public banking movement.
Speaking with my public bank hat on, which is definitely separate from my Stop the Money Pipeline hat, I co-founded the San Francisco Public Bank Coalition.
In 2019, California climate groups joined forces with cities and counties, labor unions, and 180 state and community organizations to win passage of a state law allowing municipalities to create public banks. Those banks can only serve local governments, not individuals. But this year, 2021, the state legislature passed another public bank law that would provide free public banking services for everyone. More than 40% of California's Black and Latino households are currently underbanked, lacking access to basic financial services because of fees and minimum balance requirements, leaving them to be exploited by check cashing services and predatory lenders. Meanwhile, efforts are underway in 8 other states to pass public banking laws, and San Francisco is now laying the groundwork to open California's first public bank.
Currently, there's a working group at the city level to look into a business plan and governance structures that will eventually submit to the state for approval, but it's going to be years till we see one.
But you don't have to wait to take action. If you want to know if your bank funds fossil fuels, email the CEOs of climate bad banks, join a cohort to move your money, or find a bank more in line with your values. You'll find links at cool-solutions.org to help you do it.
We multiply the impact of moving our money when we make it public. This is what we did, is planning ads in major papers. If you've moved your money for climate reasons recently or years ago, you can go to thisiswhatwedid.org and add your name. Thanks for joining us for Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up. For more cool stories, visit our website, cool-solutions.org, or find us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to our guests, Jim Thompson, Savannah Bertrand,
Jackie Fielder, and Megan Rinza.
And to Scott Holmes, Chad Crouch, and the People's Echo for our music.
Stop the money pipeline. May our money and our values